Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast. We're up here with our dogs as usual, but hopefully these new mics will drown out the sound or not pick up the sound of their
snorting. They're snorting right now and slobbering on our bed, which is great.
Basically, we just have a big dog bed here sleeping so low on the ground.
Listener heard about the
last year
saga of now sleeping on the floor.
We spent an entire year last year
talking about it, right?
2022 was our journey to a more comfortable sleeping situation.
The tummy mat is what we have going on, and a thin thing of foam, right?
I don't think we actually have the tatami mat. We just have like the, I don't know what they're all called. Maybe we do. I thought that was the thing that went underneath the thing.
Oh, well, I mean, like, wherever the Japanese mattress is, that's what we have.
Yeah.
I thought it was tatami, but it's not. No, you're right. The tatami is a bamboo thing.
We don't have the bamboo thing. We have a rug. And
it's super comfortable, but it's very weird.
But like it's very low on the floor.
Right.
So any animal thinks that you've made them, him or her, I don't know about misgendering our animals, but. Yeah, I can't remember what we were going to talk about, but in other words, we don't want to keep talking about our sleeping situation or how epic it is that we go to Planet Fitness or Price Chopper Fitness every day. We should go into long, detailed discussion about how we feel about our workout.
This is the age of us being very old because we spend a lot of time on our walks talking about how our backs don't hurt anymore.
But what's so great is we were leaving Price Chopper Fitness.
Why did you call it that? Because there's a Price Chopper right next to Planet Fitness, so we can do our shopping right after we work out.
Yeah. It should be like Price Fitness or Chopper Fitness or Planet, right. Planet Chopper. We were leaving the exercise portion of our morning time, and a person came running out of the gym to ask about one certain exercise where you push a heavy weight back with your back. And he said, does that help your lower back?
He's at our age, right?
He was
desperate. He was like, does that work?
Does that work? You're like, oh, yeah. He went back in and was like, I think he's probably still there.
I didn't think it would. It's a magical machine. I have not had no lower back pain for ages. So
yeah, and it massages your back as you push it back.
So generally, just since we're talking about something that's going to bore our listener anyway, I've done weights all my life, really since I've been in my 20s, and. I love free weights because they actually work more of your body. Just doing one exercise with free weights works more of your muscles because you have to keep the thing in balance and.
You have to use your whole body to pick it up.
Use your whole body, right. And I had a set of free weights, so it was free. I didn't have to pay for a gym membership. And so I had a whole bunch of gym equipment that I'd use every day. But then when I turned 45 or 46, it just started hurting. Everything's hurting. I was doing proper form, but I wasn't. I just could. My back hurt. I'm thinking, and probably Paul Aronson is going to say I'm wrong about this because he's a bodybuilder.
He goes to the gym.
Yeah, but he uses. Oh, he doesn't use the machines. He uses the free weights and the. Like I had a bench press down there that I used in the basement, I did deadlifts with it and everything. But now I can't do it. So I use the machines, and every part of my body feels better, and I'm actually gaining muscle again for the first time in ages.
So, I love the machines. I like that you can go up and down.
Planet Fitness should like pay us.
Anyway, they this, should. This they should. Like a, an infomercial.
Yeah. And it's cheap.
Like, we've been 5 minutes into discussion of how great Planet Fitness is. It The machines, yeah, it makes it so that you can lift and then you can get stronger overall.
Yeah.
Instead of just hurting yourself. I was hurting myself.
Right. Right.
And it has a sense of camaraderie. You don't speak to anyone, but you're allowed to sort of nod at people as you
There's
pass
definitely
them.
A difference between the Binghamton Planet Fitness and the Hilton Head Planet Fitness.
Yeah.
I mean, the Hilton Head Planet Fitness was, you know, it's not, it wasn't like Gold's Gym. Gold's Gym and other places like that, it can be like a super meat market, like with all the trainers there training the young wives while their husbands are at the office. And it's really weird. It's really weird vibes there. But the Planet Fitness,
it's a place to really get in shape if you're struggling with your fitness journey.
It's the, no, the on the
it says no judgment
on the
everywhere.
Wall, it says no judgment zone
everywhere. And that's true.
There
that's
is,
absolutely
well,
true.
Well, Hilton Head had more judgment.
Yeah, no.
Because it's
I'm
a
saying,
beach town and there are people like who are really like
but here in Binghamton,
buff, whatever.
That's a true statement.
Yeah, people come in all states of fitness. Or lack of, and they don't really know, don't know what they're doing. They're just kind of like.
I like the people who just like sort of walk by a machine and like do something sort of vaguely and then walk on.
Yeah.
That's, well, that's what I would like to do.
Right.
That would be my dream.
You're not supposed to judge them.
I'm not judging them. I'm happy they're there. And I wish that people would come to church the way they go to Planet Fitness, because the dedication of people who go every single day.
Yeah. Yeah, we were talking about this last night. It's a little bit like a church in some ways. I mean, it's like if you don't have a church.
Without God.
Except without God, right? So I'm saying if you don't have a community, like if you don't have a church, I can see why people just dive headlong into their gym. Because it's a routine thing.
You're not being judged.
You're not being judged. It's kind of liturgy that goes with it. You're
doing something good for yourself.
You're doing something good for yourself. You're helping
just like
your body.
Just like at church.
Right? So church has a lot of those benefits, right? Ideally, it has a good community there. Everyone's coming to better to for spiritual wellness.
Wellness.
Yeah, I mean forgiveness of your sins and
yeah,
and relationship with Jesus and filling the Jesus shaped hole in your heart, which is what you should be doing. But if you don't have that though, I think. The gym gives you like almost all of that except the spiritual and probably some aspect of the spiritual part of it because body and soul are
connected.
But I can see how people just think, oh, well, I have my gym.
I do wish that people would think of church. Like, because I think when people go to the gym, they don't think, okay, I'm going to come here once a year at Christmas. And lift my one weight and then go home.
Right.
And I'm good for the year. Like, no one's going to agree to that if
right.
you were. If
they
you
know it takes time to get in shape, right?
It takes you an hour a day.
Yeah.
So you should think of church at least an hour a week,
right?
2 hours a week for your, and you won't notice any benefit
at first.
Like, it would take years and years for you to notice
right.
the slow change. And building of spiritual muscle.
Right.
We should write a book. This seems like a really good moment to sort of write a book like God. Well, no, somebody already got God's Gym. That's already been written.
Has it been written?
I'm sure it has. And there's probably like Gym is cut out
that'd
in stone.
That'd be really like cliched and like.
Instead of Gold's Gym, God's
yeah.
Gym. Yeah, I'm sure that's a book.
And it would be. It would be,
we should.
Like, I feel like it would be selling our soul to something.
We should write a book called like Jesus Fitness Planet Chopper.
We could probably make a lot of money making it, writing a book like
that.
We'd sell our souls and go to hell. But
no, I think we should do that, and we should get sponsorships from both Price Chopper and Planet Fitness. It's going to be my new thing.
Yeah.
So. That was one when this was not a subject we were going to discuss.
No, it just kind of popped up.
I have a thing that I'd really like to complain about. There's two funny things that have happened to me this week. One is that Kay Jume got on Twitter and said that somebody put her book into ChatGPT and said, like, to critique this work or something.
Provide arguments against. her thesis or something.
And apparently ChatGPT was like, oh, we can't.
It's impossible.
This
her
is
argument, so her argument is so well constructed and takes into account all the different items of evidence, and nobody could possibly refute her.
It's really funny because all week I've been seeing in other places news items about how, I don't know, is ChatGPT and GPT-4 the same kind of thing?
I don't know.
Well, GPT-4 is apparently really, really dumb. It's getting dumber all the time because it's not having enough, like they're screening out so much information to make sure that it stays woke that it's degrading, it's getting dumber. Like, so I just wondered if maybe
this might be,
this
maybe,
is like,
but a, no, but see, like our friend JD Cook, who's my co-star
and yeah, yeah,
firm podcast. He put the same question into his ChatGPT and it came out with lots of different options of good arguments to refute KKK. So I'm wondering I think someone sent her that and said, oops, what's this? Someone sent her that and said they put that into their ChatGPT. So I'm wondering if that person actually did that or whether that person didn't actually do that and just made it up. It's kind of a joke and sent it to her and she took it seriously, or if she knew it was a joke and put it up as a joke. I don't know. It's really, but apparently you put that in the regular ChatGPT and it actually comes up with good like regular critiques of her book.
Yeah, it was really,
so I don't know.
I don't know, but then somebody, well, Meg Mashin, in as a critique of her book, reposted my Jesus and John Wayne review.
That's very nice of her.
So that was really great.
Yeah.
So it's as good as ChatGPT.
That review, I think, is sterlingly good. Is that an adjective, sterlingly?
It is now.
It is.
We're doing it this way now.
It's a super good review, and it costs you so much as far as.
Yeah, I'm basically a martyr.
People
being mad at me.
Who were at least tentatively your friends and people who supported you got so angry with you after that. That.
Yeah.
You had to have a confrontation with a group of people because of that. Which was really like a struggle session.
Yeah, it was a struggle. I'm pretty sure that's what it's called. Okay, well, that was one fun thing. The other fun thing is that I finally wrote my review all the way of, her name is, Amy Peeler, Jesus, no, Women and the Gender of God. And I just want to say that this book was a real bear because she doesn't define any of, like, the keywords that need to be defined. So it's really kind of slippery.
Every bit of it that you've read to me is just so weird. Is that, you know, it's like, you know, so the same thing it is. Like, it's like, it reminds me of trying to read through some deconstructionist stuff in the academic realm, where they're purposely writing so obtusely that you can't follow the logic because there really isn't any logic, because they don't believe in logic.
But so, they still want to use language.
Yeah, they still
use like they really want to use language to communicate important concepts about their thoughts.
Right.
But they don't want you to be able to respond to them. So there has to be like a shield of,
yeah,
so it's of like verbiage between you and them.
It's like Amy Peeler has an idea about what she wants to say, but she hasn't quite worked out all the details and the logic of it yet. And so, you know, when you don't know something very well, and you haven't like lived, you can't teach it very well. You can't communicate it very well.
Or you have a hypothesis, but you haven't
worked out all the
lived with it for a long time.
Yeah.
You haven't tested it very much so that it's refined. And so you end up making really sweeping, it does become one of those grand unifying theories where you sweep everything up into it. Well, so the part that really, I was typing busily away and then I looked back at the screen to see what I had typed, and I had written out this quote from her, which continues to amaze me. And it's not, you know, what's not amazing is that God values women. She thinks that's amazing. God values women.
Because there's so many people who teach that God doesn't value
women. Yeah, there's so many people who teach that God doesn't value women.
It's like a major tenet of the Christian faith. up to this point, up to her book. It was.
Yeah. And but no, what actually is amazing is that she, and she wrote this on the page. Christianity often gets God wrong, or Christianity got God wrong for a long time. So I think it's Christianity often gets God wrong, which is okay. If Joseph Smith had said that, or Allah, or I mean Muhammad, or Genghis Khan, I okay, sure, like absolutely would expect someone to say something like
Right.
that. But for Amy Poehler, who
Is
is a
a
quote,
priest, quote unquote, in the Episcopal Church.
an Orthodox, apparently like a conservative
Right.
Episcopal congregation. So she, as I said last time, she affirms basic tenets of Christian doctrine, which is a little bit surprising. She affirms the resurrection of the dead, the Trinity. Like she doesn't deny that Jesus is God. She believes in the virgin birth. All these things, which many people stumble over and think, oh, well, I'm going to be Christian, but not really.
Yeah.
She believes all those things.
Right.
But then she writes, as a Christian, on the page, Christianity often gets God and women wrong. Christianity often has gotten women wrong. Well, that is so vague. What does that
Well, it's
mean?
sweeping. It's like,
Who, which Christian, which Christianity?
she
Like,
mean always like
all
the Christian
what
theology,
is
Christian,
Christianity in that sentence? It's like, I don't want to be pedantic, but Christianity is something that could be a totally a wax nose if you wanted to like define it a certain way. And of course, I think
Well, all
that
you have to do, and all she thinks she has to do, then is show examples of some Christians getting it wrong,
I
getting
mean,
something
I
wrong.
thought it was really slanderous that Kay Dumais would say evangelical, all
Yeah.
white evangelicals fractured a nation. And
Right.
that's which
Sweeping
ones?
up millions of people
So
and
then she
yeah.
provides a lot of, but she named names. You know, she's like providing data that she thinks proves that white evangelicals fractured a nation. Okay. I think she's
I don't think she
still really,
provided.
really wrong,
Yeah, she.
but she. Was her thesis was slightly narrower, let's just say that. Amy Poehler says Christianity got God wrong. Well, anyway, I'm still astonished, and I keep sitting in a chair and staring into the
Like, can you
middle
imagine
distance.
a mom saying, "Islam got
Allah,
Allah wrong,"
yeah, Islam got Allah wrong.
A Jew saying Judaism has Yahweh all wrong. I
Yeah.
mean, you
Why
it's
would you say that?
a rabbi saying that. No, you wouldn't, because
You could.
why are you a Christian if you think Christianity
You
got
could.
all wrong?
Yeah.
Wouldn't she be something else if you thought that?
And it's really not true. I didn't have time to go into this on the in the article, but it is absolutely not true that Christianity got women wrong either, because it's people like Peeler and others should go back and look at how the Western world, with the dawn of Christianity into the world, the lot and plight of women was radically altered. Christianity did not get women wrong. It got women right. And when the reason we ended up with a feminism is because of the way that women were elevated and valued in the Bible. That's not, we didn't end up with feminism for that reason, but the women were allowed to be people as a result of Christianity. I'm trying not to put, I just, I'm really, that is such a facile and thing to say, and I'm shocked that Erdmann's let that be put on a piece of paper and put in all the bookstores. Like, why didn't somebody stop along the way and say, hey, let's not say that that way? That's a really sweeping claim that you haven't provided evidentiary support for.
Well, I'm not sure if this is how she's substantiating that, but her understanding of the incarnation is unique, to say the least. I mean, it's you know, her understanding of it is that Jesus has a maleness unlike any other maleness, because his humanity was taken completely and totally from Mary. And so I don't think she says this, but so he's like this male female. Is that he's a male. He's not a male, but he's also a female. Is that?
No, he's not. I mean, she's not trying to make him into a female, but I think that she's trying to erase any possibility of something like a toxic masculinity from him.
He's not masculine, right?
He's not masculine.
That's what she said.
Yeah. He's not.
Because God's not masculine.
Yeah. There's no maleness about him. Like, and that's so vague. What does that mean? Right. Like, he's biologically a male. So even though his mother was Mary, she didn't give birth to a girl.
She gave birth to a man.
A boy who became a man. So aspects
of her conception that her entire conception she didn't do by herself. This was God creating in her.
She didn't create Jesus.
Right.
She accepted the creation of Jesus
within her. Right.
Within her.
And we don't know a lot about what that entails for Jesus's biological makeup. I mean, how do we know
anything about it, actually.
Since the Bible doesn't say. All we know is that he's a legit human male who's like us in every way, except he doesn't have any sin nature.
Which she says he's actually, this is where she contradicts the scriptures, and I don't think she means to. It doesn't seem like she's trying to contradict the scriptures, but she says at one point, his maleness was not like, it was unlike any maleness that exists in humanity. Like, he was not like us in his maleness.
She means that because he had all of us have human fathers. Is that what, and he didn't.
He didn't.
Therefore his maleness is not like our maleness.
Yeah.
But the scriptures say that are exactly the opposite.
They say that he was like us.
In every way.
In every way.
He had been made like his brothers in every way. Hebrews chapter 2. And so that can't. That
so I would say he would have.
He's a unicorn in the sense that he's sinless, right? I mean, there's no one's like him in that respect, but that's not just men, that's everyone. Nobody's like him in that.
He would have to be recognizably male to people at the time.
Right. Or people would.
Or they would have been really freaked out. Because
right.
If he was like a man but not male, that would have been really freaky and nobody would have followed him. If he wasn't sort of a regular guy.
In a pre-industrial, like you were saying in your review, I think, in a pre-industrial society in which everything's gendered, right? Everything's gendered. There's no like space where you decide is this everything's either male or female, masculine or feminine. If he came on the scene as some like an
other,
I mean, it would be
or like a trans woman, man.
That's
an invention of right
that
now.
Would not have flown.
No.
I mean, there's lots of things about Jesus that didn't fly, but it wasn't because he was.
People weren't put off by his his physiology.
Right. There's no hint of that. There's nothing in the New Testament that hints that he's like, there's something about his, the way he carried himself.
That was just a little special.
Like an effeminate person.
Yeah, but she doesn't say that either. Like, it's really, I mean, there are people who try to say that Jesus was basically a woman because he cared so much. Well, you know.
Because men don't care.
Yeah.
Men are just cruel, violent beasts. And
all
so
the time.
Any act of compassion is necessarily feminine.
Necessarily feminine.
Right.
Like a hen gathering its chicks.
Right. Right.
So, it's just, the thing about it, I couldn't even get. This is just one thing. I ended up only writing about two big problems. There were so many. Like, every chapter was full of really big issues like this where you think, wait a minute, wait. What are you saying exactly? Because you're not saying it clearly, I think, that so that you can deny that you possibly said something that you maybe didn't mean to say. But you should be clear. You should.
Well, the whole thing is, I mean, it sounds like also like the whole book is a non sequitur. Like, because Jesus was born of a woman, therefore.
Ergo.
women need to be ordained to the priesthood.
Yeah, that's basically it. And I, like, hey, I've heard a lot of arguments for things, and I like some of them and I don't like some of them. This one did not flow. Like, if you want to make a case for women celebrating the Eucharist, him being born of a woman isn't one of those cases. Like, it just doesn't, it doesn't follow. Because yeah. everybody was born of a woman, which she says. I'm glad she noticed. Like, that's also said breathlessly. Hey, like, hey, did you know that every man alive today has been born of a woman? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I know. And that's like the feature, of course. You know, God, it began to overturn the curse.
Man, yeah. And then brings every other man
out of a woman. Yeah.
Okay. Even Jesus.
So he's undoing the curse. But like a lot of people have noticed that through time. But it doesn't mean that men and women are the same or that God is calling them to do exactly the same things in the church either. Like, it just, you need to make the case some other way.
Well, this whole thing we've talked about before, and it's that unless a woman can be a priest, she has no power,
no authority, no influence, no meaning.
Yeah. She's just not a person.
So, and that's something I think that needs to be addressed. Like, yeah. Christianity, whatever that is, should recover the purpose and meaning for women that codes to an elite status.
I'm not sure what you mean by recover, though. Because
I think not recover for everyone, because not everyone has lost it, but for the awful, what is awful? So white female liberal.
Oh, right.
That person is searching for meaning.
Right. Well, if your mind has been trained by, was it third wave feminism, where you've got to use technology to shut down your body's functions so that you can get the job that a man has and achieve and climb up the corporate ladder. I mean, in that understanding of what a woman is, of course, if you're not a priest, you're nothing.
You're nothing.
Right. Right. But that's a brand.
And there's only one meaningful kind of speech, and mm-hmm. that's the preach moment. Like, there's mm-hmm. no other speech that's valuable in human life, except if you happen to be able to preach the sermon on Sunday morning, then right. you have no purpose and no meaning. And I mean, that just shows the sort of degradation and wreckage of our society that anyone would even think that. So it's too bad, but that I do think that for those kinds of people, there does need to be some recovery work done. Christianity needs to be able to talk to affluent, that's what it is, affluent white female liberals, awfuls.
I don't think their eyes are open to the actual real power that women do wield. I mean, in the actual influence for good, hopefully.
Or for evil.
That women wield in any traditionally structured community. You don't have, there's no battle of the sexes because both sexes are wielding their influence in a way that's gendered. And you see it in like churches, of course. Like, there were women in my older women usually in every congregation that the priest knows, I don't want to cross that person. We laid one to rest.
I think it comes with the rejection of age as a valuable thing too.
Right.
So here's another thing I was just thinking about this week that relates directly in the church. When you devalue age, then all of the people who have wisdom and knowledge, I think, feel like they're not valuable and they don't have anything to offer. And so they go do something else.
Right.
Whereas older women should have like a solidity about them and a the right to speak on a variety of subjects to whoever they want to speak to. And I think in the past they really did. But that's gone away along with the cult of youth.
Right, right.
So, it has to be the young person who ascends the stairs of the pulpit to tell everybody what to do,
right.
Which is really weird.
Yeah,
it's a difficult thing.
Yeah, I mean, part of it too. She says she does come down on the idea that it's okay to use masculine pronouns for God. You can respect his pronouns, right?
You should, because the Bible says to. Even though when God calls himself husband or bridegroom, it has nothing, like there's no correspondence between like an actual husband. Like that's not masculine or male at all. For God to say that,
really?
It isn't. It's just only that the Son calls the Father the Father. That's the only thing that you have to go on. You should not understand God being the bridegroom in a gendered way at all. It just isn't. That's
does she offer an argument for that?
Well, she says it many times over. She repeats it several times.
So when God caused Holy Scripture to be written for us to read, he knew that we have this thing called marriage because he gave it to us. And he knew that what marriage involved was a husband and a wife. So when he used the language of husband for himself, he did not mean for us ever to think of our own marriages as an analogy to.
Well, not if it involves any kind of masculinity. No, obviously not. Obviously, because God is not male. I just think two things can both be true at the same time. Like God's not male.
Ontologically male, and yet male. There's a masculinity about him, and there's even in some ways we would classically associate as femininity about him, but he has been very clear about how we're to address him with male pronouns, and so
she was really upset about John Piper saying that Christianity, whatever that is, has a masculine feel. He said that at some point. And also she really didn't like C.S. Lewis saying that
it does.
Everybody is involved as part of the bride. So there is this sort of receptivity about all human people that needs to be there, and that God being the person who authors salvation and authors creation is a sort of a more masculine type thing.
Yeah.
She said, no, how dare you?
Where did she have a reason for that?
I can't. That was towards the end. Then I read about it, but I couldn't address it, so I didn't like read all her footnotes on that thing.
I mean, clearly it does. I mean, the structure of the whole of the faith is one in which a word is being proclaimed to us, which transforms and remakes, and that word does battle against the forces of sin, death, and destruction.
Okay, well, it sounds like you're about to start talking about how everything a la Josh Butler is about sex.
No,
I feel like there's two poles. No, I know. I'm just saying, like, if you say word, you're about to start talking about sex.
Oh, is that Josh Butler?
There's like two poles here. There's like the Josh Butler, every God is like uber mensch, like, everything is generative, everything is.
About sex.
And then on the opposite pole, you have Amy Poehler, like,
nothing
is about men.
Nothing is gendered.
Nothing is gendered. There's nothing going on here at all. There's nothing, nothing, nothing. And like, hey, guys, maybe.
You should become an Anglican. Well, she is.
She is sort of
Anglican. No, she's Episcopalian. But she should become a Christian and an Anglican.
It's just, you can have, like, there's a realm in the scripture where God wants you to think about things in a nuanced way where you don't just fix yourself to one or the other extreme and then reject all other data or information that might contradict that view, including God using quite meaningful and interesting language, masculine language about himself.
Right.
and interesting feminine language about the church, which obviously includes men. So, right. Like, you can't push it too far. You can't say that all the men become women when they join the church.
Right.
Or that everybody needs to become intersex because,
right. Because the church is
of the bride.
The bride, right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, in the so I think even in the congregational level, though, like, you have the husband-bride thing taking place. Like, but that's one reason why typically one... That's one argument in favor of a male preacher, because he's standing up as a representative of Christ. He hasn't become Jesus. He's just he's representing Jesus to the congregation, which is his bride. So there's a
you're not allowed to say that. Well, because it can't be that men represent Jesus, and that's the whole question of representation is really, really, really important, and women need to also represent Jesus.
But he's a male.
No, I mean, he is, but it's unlike any other maleness, and so women represent Jesus,
God,
too. They do. That's what
she
says.
But God made him a male so that he could be the husband of the bride.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying, and you're just going to have to stop talking, because that's kind of how deep it goes. Like, she just asserts.
Yeah.
That it,
that's not
her
right.
View.
Whatever you're thinking is not what right.
Yeah. Okay. Which is just an odd way to.
Well, it's interesting. All the right people love the book. I mean, everybody. You know, Michael Bird and the DeMay person.
I just don't understand.
Everybody loved the book.
Like, what did they love about it? Because it's so vague, and it's and okay. She tries to make an interesting hypothesis, but she doesn't prove her hypothesis. The only way that she keeps talking about it is that everything gets fuzzier and fuzzier.
Do you think it's confirmation bias? Like, if you agree with something already, then if someone says something you agree, the thing you agree with, then you just think it's brilliant.
I mean, that's probably true, but I wish I knew more of what she was trying to say. Like, I wish she could describe in what way Jesus' masculinity is unlike any other man's masculinity. Like, that isn't explained, and right. why Mary is our essentially salvific representation, because, or for women, like, Jesus can't
save unless what she's saying about his nature is true, right?
Because all of his human nature came from Mary. That means that he can save women,
and if her construction of that is not right, we don't know. Again, the Bible does not tell us anything about about what was going on as God caused him to be conceived in Mary's womb. So she's building a lot of her argument on conjecture about that. But it's conjecture upon which all of Christianity hinges, because if she's not right in her conjecture, God, Jesus can't save women. Because she's suggesting that the only way that happens is he assumes femininity females up in his being a male, and like any other male, right?
Born of a woman, of the flesh of a woman. Yeah. But he saves males because he's a man. Which...
So he has to have both elements in his makeup. Is that what she's saying?
Well, his flesh comes from the body of a female, so
he can save females.
Yeah, that's what she says. I'm afraid to say it, because it's like... It's really not a helpful thing to say.
No, it's
not true.
It's not true, because Jesus is the element of Jesus' essence that Jesus assumes humanity in his humanity. Like there's an old patristic thing that goes back to Gregory Nazianzen. I can't pronounce his name. I think it's him. But what Christ doesn't assume, he doesn't redeem. So he has to assume all aspects of our human nature, being made like us in every way except without sin. But classically, the aspect of our nature that saves both men and women is his humanity, right? It's his humanity that he takes up. And so we, as human beings, from conception to death, are redeemed by Jesus' conception, growth, and death.
Yeah.
Not his maleness.
Right. What's weird is that, like, in trying to make women equal to men in some sense, which they are. Like, they are ontologically, they're part of humanity. And so there's a oneness about humanity,
right?
Just like God is one, humanity, male and female, is also one in some sense. But in order to make it so that women are at least as good or better than men, you have to split them apart. You have to, like, bifurcate humanity. And so it's just weird. Like, she ends up falling into the pit that she's trying not to fall into, I feel like.
So many people over the last decade have gone from complementarian or just regular, not thinking about it, to rabidly egalitarian, to rabidly, like, angry egalitarian. And books like this are like the Demay and Navarre and the Grigor, all that's like fueling it. Alongside this sense of being aggrieved, like
it's really the interesting. Grievance narrative is really interesting because women have really never had it better.
Yeah.
Women have never been more equal alongside men, have never had more opportunities to speak on every subject that they desire to speak on, have never ever been for women suddenly now to feel a sense of grievance is really astonishing, because the women themselves who are feeling grieved are at the very elite top of the pack in every sense. They are it's not like there's very, people of color living in slums, women who really do have it very bad are trying to make it this case. It's women who have been given every opportunity.
Well, you know how it is. You have a woman an inch and she takes a mile.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, we've talked a long time and I feel like it's time to carry this over to the demotivations portion. Yeah. We've talked a long time.
Yeah, we have. There is one.
Are you going to apologize for just making that horrible joke?
No, I'm not going to apologize. That's going to be funny. There's something I wanted to say. I forgot what it was. I was going to clarify. Oh, this is what it was. Yeah. Bishop Herzog.
Oh, yeah.
Died yesterday. And for those of you who don't know, he was the Bishop of Albany in the Episcopal Church for a long time. And he was a really good man, and we remember him fondly because of the help that he extended to us.
Yeah,
during our, all the torturous affair with the Episcopal Church, from which we were out of a building after a while. But for the 7 years before that, I mean, he did everything that he could and more.
Yeah,
things that he probably shouldn't have done under the canons of the Episcopal Church to help us. And so he's been faithful. I remember wanting to transfer to the Diocese of Albany. I thought, instead of leaving the Episcopal Church, maybe we could just transfer to the Diocese of Albany under Bishop Herzog and Bishop Benna, but it couldn't happen. And it's kind of nice that he's now, he dies in the ACNA, mm-hmm. in the Diocese of the Living Word. He came to our church just last year, right?
Last year. He just popped in
with his wife. And just a gentle, humble, good man, and really thankful for his ministry and example of faithfulness. So.
Yeah. Well, prayers for his family and mm-hmm. all of them as they grieve. So... Well, yes, we are going to go over to demotivations for a few minutes and talk about something. We're not sure what yet, but it's going to be scintillating, so you should definitely follow us there. But thank you so much for listening, and we will probably be back next week.